But first, it's time for Word of Mouth with Michael Rosen.
Hello. How good are you on national anthems? Do you recognise this one? If you're stumped, it's not surprising because it's the national anthem of a country that never existed, Amikayo. Amikayo was going to be the world's first Esperanto-speaking state in a tiny parcel of land, 3.5 square kilometres, at the point where Belgium, Germany and the Netherlands meet. But 90 years ago, the dream died when the Versailles Treaty gave the territory to Belgium. Well, to commemorate that important anniversary, this week's edition of Word of Mouth is devoted to artificial or constructed languages. Erica Okrent, author of a new book, In the Land of Invented Languages. Erica, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
If you ask anyone to think of an invented language, the one that most people will immediately come up with is Esperanto. But there are hundreds of them, aren't there? Is it possibly thousands?
Yes, even more than we know. There's at least 900 documented ones. Probably as long as people have been conscious that there is such a thing as language, they've noted that languages don't always behave in a very logical way. And people have thought through the centuries that they could improve upon language, make it less ambiguous, more logical, easier to learn, easier to speak. And this is an idea that has cropped up again and again and again.
But Esperanto is by far the most popular?
Yes, Esperanto is the one major success story, which is funny. Most people, when they say, oh, didn't that die out a while ago? But it's actually the most popular and widely spoken invented language of all time.
And how did it come about?
It was invented by Ludwig Zamenhof, who was a mild-mannered doctor in the late 19th century who noticed that all this nationalism and strife around him seemed to be caused by language, by people in these mixed areas speaking different languages who didn't get along with each other. And he invented Esperanto as a language that would be easy for the world to learn and could serve as a second language for the world so that we could all meet on neutral ground.
And going back to Amikayo, was anybody interested in this place? I mean, it seems like it's stuck between places rather than have anything of interest in itself.
Well, there was hotly contested ownership over the zinc mines there, which were very valuable.
So this was in some ways the ideal place for Esperanto, wasn't it, with the three countries coming together at that very place?
Yes, this was a neutral state, a disputed territory, but unfortunately, the world has no place for Amikayo, and it's part of history now.
Well, nowadays, Amikayo is known as Kelmis, and there are still some enthusiastic Esperanto speakers there. On the line from Belgium is one of them, Mathieu Schreimecker. I wonder, can I ask you, what does the name Amikayo mean?
Amikayo is an Esperanto word and signifies the land of friends. The suffix ayo is a place, and the prefix amiko is a friend.
And when did the idea for Amikayo start?
In the year 1906. It was a Frenchman with the name Gustave Roy, professor for languages, who had the idea to create an independent Esperanto state in Kelmis, in my village.
How many people in the town were actually speaking it?
Nobody spoke Esperanto. They began to learn in the year 1908.
And were there classes for children?
Yes. We had in my village 69 children who followed Esperanto and 70 adults, together 169 in the year 1908. It was a beginning. The people was very interested in Esperanto. I must say that all the people didn't learn Esperanto, but many families had one Esperanto speaker.
But why did the dream die?
Because after the First World War, Kelmis became for the first time a Belgian village.
Are you sad that Amikayo never happened? That it didn't succeed?
No, I am not sad, because what I regret is that we have not the world office in Kelmis.
And what about the zinc mine? What happened to that?
This zinc mine, it was exploited without interruption since 1344 until 1952.
Do you still commemorate the idea of amikajo?
It's not forgotten. Regularly, Esperanto speakers came to Kelmis to visit this historical land full of stories. They came alone, they came in groups. For example, past year, in the month December, we received 90 Esperanto speakers, and there were 22 nations represented.
Do people who speak Esperanto in Kelmis, do you meet together sometimes and talk to each other?
Each month we come together, and these people come from Netherlands, from Belgium, and from Germany. The Club of Esperanto is named Senlime. Senlime signifies without frontier.
Without frontier. Without frontiers.
Yes, frontiers. And the number is 45 persons.
Thank you very much indeed. That's wonderful, Mathieu. Merci beaucoup. Hein?
I did it with great pleasure. And it's my first conversation in English.
C'était très bien fait, si je peux le dire. Hein? Thank you very much. Erika, Esperanto in some ways represents a quite distinct branch of artificial languages in that it was designed, had a political purpose to further international understanding. But how many of the invented languages are like that?
Well, many of them in the 19th century, 20th century era had these goals of peace and bringing together people in mutual understanding. In the 17th century, the goal was to uncover the truth by means of a language of truth, where every word stood for exactly the meaning of one concept. People saw that mathematical notation was changing the world. People were making discoveries about the truths of the universe, and people thought, well, we could make a mathematics of concepts then, of everything, boil the world down to its elements, and then compose words as if they were formulas.
So just as the natural sciences try to classify the world, then in a way they tried to make language do the same thing, did they?
Yes, and that's exactly what happened. The most successful of these languages, John Wilkins' philosophical character, he started with these goals, but what he ended up having to do was make a 600-page chart of everything in the universe, a huge tree diagram where everything, every concept, every element fit into the entire universe. It's an incredible project, but it turned out to be pretty impossible to actually speak this language.
Did he have a hierarchy for living things, for example? Were we at the top and, I don't know, insects down the bottom and below that single-cell organisms or something? Did he have a hierarchy like that?
Yes, he did. So there were cold-blooded, warm-blooded. But then when you get to the bottom, it was based on things like the shape of the head and what kind of disposition. So, a dog has a friendly disposition, a fox has a crafty disposition, and they were separated on that basis.
So it really just was his bias, really.
Yes, and that's the problem. If you want to make a language that exposes the truth of the universe, you have to know the truth of the universe, and that's the real problem.
Well, thanks for that, Erika. Stay there. I've got someone else to meet. An invented language that maybe has a little bit in common with those very logical languages that Erika was just talking about there is Logban. Logban is a language designed to test a controversial idea in linguistics called the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis. This is the suggestion, which we've discussed before on Word of Mouth, that the language you speak determines the way you think. So back in the 1960s, a sociologist called James Cook Brown had the idea that if you invented a new language, completely logical, unambiguous, and free from social bias, then you could test out that theory. Now, the trouble is it's incredibly hard to use, I gather. The number of fluent speakers is tiny and they hardly ever meet each other. But I've got here a rare example of an almost fluent conversation that happened in Glasgow in 1995. Let's listen. Colin Fine has been involved in Logban and its predecessor, Loglan, since the late 1970s. Colin, welcome to the programme. How is your Logban, in fact? Are you any good at it?
I'm certainly not fluent. I haven't had anybody to talk it to for probably about 10 years.
And what is the point of it?
Well, for me, for interest, for its own sake.
I understand there was an idea that maybe Lojban could be used as a way for computers and humans to speak to each other.
Certainly people have said that. I've never really believed in it myself. If it had come along early enough, there was just a remote possibility it might have worked for that. But the trouble is that the advances in natural language understanding by computers have overtaken it.
And what can you do with it that you can't do in English?
You can make distinctions readily that are difficult to make in English, if you choose to.
So give us an example.
Oh, if I say le joubme, the thing I'm describing as a table, is different from le joubme, the thing that really is a table. If I say le joubme, I'm referring to something that, say, a pile of books that you've put something on. That wouldn't be accurate.
Oh, that's an improvised table.
Because it's not really a table. But it would be reasonable to refer to it as le joubme, because by using the word le rather than le, I'm signalling to you that I'm not interested in whether it really is one, but I'm describing it as such and expecting you to pick that up. We right. do that all the time in natural languages when we use a word like the.
And what about in Lojban, how about tenses? Is Lojban very logical about its past tense, for example?
Yes, but it's as logical as the speaker chooses to be. You can leave out tense entirely if you wish.
So you get it from context, yeah?
If I say, mi clama la Bristol, I am a goer to the thing named Bristol. I go to Bristol.
And here you are in Bristol, so that means you came here today.
Probably.
You're explaining
but,
that to me.
But it might be talking about next year.
Yes.
But if I say, mi pusi clama la Bristol, it means I, short time ago, came
right.
to. You can specify the direction in time, past, future, present, the amount of separation from here, short, long, medium, the duration, whether it's a short, long duration, the contours, is it you're talking about the beginning of something or the continuation or something that's gone beyond its natural endpoint?
Wow.
And grammatically, you can do all these things in space as well as time. There's no difference. In most natural languages, you have to specify when a thing is placed in time. You don't have to specify where it is in place. In Lojban, expressions of time and expressions of place are equally optional.
So let's just do a little bit on the history of Lojban. Let's do the gossip bit, shall we? It started off as Luglan or Loglan.
Luglan, yes.
So what was the deal here? What happened? Why did Luglan become Lojban?
A group of people thought that certain changes and certain ways of doing things would be preferable and started doing them. And the person who'd invented it, JCB,
yes.
as he was called, James Cook Brown, he was known as JCB, he said, it's mine and you're not doing that. The schismatics were not intending a schism. They were contributing what they could to the language to improve it.
And he said, no, you're being schismatic. So are you chess-playing, mathematically-minded people, or are you...
I think a lot. I mean, I'm certainly mathematically-minded. I play with languages. I'm fascinated by natural languages and the wonderful variety and the way they develop and the way they're similar and different and the way they structure things. And so this is just, in a way, an offshoot.
And do you think learning Lojban enables you to think more clearly and logically?
I think learning any language other than your own requires you to think sometimes about particular ways of relating things or distinctions to make. In all European languages, most of the time, you have to worry about whether you're talking about one thing or many. On the whole, every time you open your mouth and speak any European language,
yes.
it matters whether you're talking singular or plural. In many Asian languages, that's simply not true. In Chinese, in Japanese, if you need to indicate one or many, you can. But you don't have to.
Right.
And so that's a distinction that somebody learning a European language from the Far East has to learn to make. There are new ways of thinking about things that you have to learn, about causality, about number. And I think perhaps because certain logical and distinctions have been built into Lojban, in the case of Lojban, yes, there'll be certain logical ways of thinking that it does require you to apply.
Colin Fine, thanks very much indeed. Well, we haven't possibly got time on the programme to cover all the invented languages out there, but one that's worth discussing is Laden. Erica, can you tell us a bit about Laden?
Ladon was invented in order to embody a woman's perspective in a language. So it has six ways of saying menstruation and six ways of saying menopause. But aside from those bodily issues, it also has many words for love, for emotions.
Well, the inventor of Ladon is a novelist called Suzette Hayden Elgin, and she lives in Arkansas, and she's on the phone now. Suzette, is there something about natural languages that excludes women's experiences?
There has been a hypothesis that English and closely related languages are inadequate for the expression of women's perceptions.
Can you give an example of what that might be?
Yes. For example, I have always thought how, in the Nativity story, how Mary must have felt about all these shepherds and kings and animals and things arriving immediately after she had given birth. It cannot have been a pleasant experience for her. And so in Ladon, we have words that specifically express the perspective of the hostess in an event of that kind. The word is radidin, defined as non-holiday, a time allegedly a holiday, but actually so much a burden because of work and preparations that it is a dreaded occasion, especially when there are too many guests and none of them help.
And when you've said that to other women, or in fact to a man like me, are people delighted and overjoyed to hear that you've discovered this category of existence that hadn't actually been graced with a word before?
Sometimes they are, but it's unlikely that a man is going to feel that way, at least where I live, in rural America. But women immediately react to that word.
And then how about the kinds of arguments that men and women quite often get into, do it in stereotypic terms, is the man says that I know the facts, and the woman says, well, never mind the facts, it's what I feel.
The most common example of that sort of dialogue is the one where the woman says, I am really cold. And the man says, oh, you are not. He's not cold, so she couldn't possibly be. And the fact that her perception is that she is cold is immediately denied. In Ladon, it's not possible to do that.
And how about the conversation that takes place where you're driving along the motorway and the woman says to the man, are you hungry? And he says, nope. And they drive on. And really what she was saying was, I am hungry. Now, how do you deal with that one?
What happens in English, in particular, is that a great deal of what needs to be communicated has to be communicated by body language and by tone of voice and by intonation. And what I did when I constructed Ladon was I tried to add grammatical devices to the language itself so that there was a way to give a surface shape to all of the things that in English have to be done with body language. So, for instance, at the beginning of every Ladon sentence, there is a speech act form that tells you what you're trying to say and how you're trying to say it. So you can say things like, I am making this statement as a joke, as the very first word in your sentence. And then at the end of the sentence, there is a word called an evidential. And the evidential says on what basis you are making this particular claim that you're making with what you're saying. So it says something like, this is based on the evidence of my own perceptions, or I am claiming that this is true because I trust the source, or I am not claiming that it is true, it's only hypothetical.
So you said there that you've got this signal to say what I'm about to say is a joke. Have you got ones to say what I'm about to say is sad, or what I'm about to say...
Yes.
Makes me very happy when I think it.
Yes, there's a whole set. I'm speaking in anger, I'm speaking in pain, I'm speaking in love, I'm speaking as a teacher, I'm speaking in fear, and all of those can go as the very first word so that you don't have this problem of having someone say something awful to you and then you say back to them, that was awful, you really hurt me, and then they say, well, I was only joking. In Ladon, what you have to do is state right up front at the very beginning of the sentence if that's what you're doing, if you're joking. And it's interesting that when I did a sort of poll after the 10-year period of the language being tested had gone by. One of the reasons that women said to me that they didn't want to use Lagan was because it would make everything so open and they would feel very vulnerable. That came as a great surprise to me. It had never occurred to me that they wouldn't welcome the fact that these things were now overt in the language. And I was also surprised by the fact that it has been mostly men who have been interested in Lagan, not women.
When you were inventing the language, did you have to consciously expunge certain elements that you felt were specifically male?
You know, what I did was I went straight to trying to translate the King James Bible, which, so far as I know, is the most masculine document in the English language.
Right.
And I grew up with it. And as I went through that, I came to things that were particularly male and that I wanted to get rid of. So, for example, in the 23rd Psalm, where it says that thou anointest my head with oil, no woman wants anybody pouring oil over her head. So I changed that to be, thou braidest my hair with thine own hands.
And how many people took it up?
I have no way of knowing. It was, for me, it was a thought experiment. I thought that what would happen would be that either women would welcome it with open arms and say how wonderful to have this language, or they would say, this is nothing like what I would imagine that a women's language should be like, and that they would substitute another one. None of that happened.
Suzette Hayden-Elgin, thanks very much indeed. Well, if I were to ask you what was the world's second most successful invented language after Esperanto, you might be surprised by the answer. It's probably Klingon, the language invented for Star Trek. The Klingon dictionary has sold 300,000 copies. Erica, how many people in the world do you think are actually capable of speaking Klingon fluently?
In a spontaneous conversation, probably 20 or 30. But lots of people have good reading and writing skills in Klingon.
With me in the studio is one of them, Alex Green, a computer programmer from Wrexham. Hello, Alex.
Nuknech. Well, that's hello in Klingon. It translates literally as, what do you want? Klingons begin a conversation by getting straight to the point. It's a language of directness, no subtlety.
So you give lessons in Klingon?
Yes, I occasionally give lessons, mostly at conventions, whenever I'm at a convention.
So was it invented for just an ordinary episode of Star Trek, or was it for a film?
No, it was invented for one of the Star Trek movies. To be specific, Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Tell me, who actually nowadays wants to learn Klingon? I mean, apart from your good self, that is.
Well, there is a thriving community of Klingon language enthusiasts, and the shorthand term for that is Klingonists.
Klingonists?
Yes. There's a Klingon Language Institute. There's a translation project whereby human works like the Bible and even Shakespeare's Hamlet have been converted into Klingon.
And does Klingon have a kind of world view? Is there a world view of Klingon, do you think?
There is a Klingon philosophy, which really it's taken a long time to sort of build up and develop. Originally, the Klingons were simply portrayed as Machiavellian, somewhat devious, and not averse to backstabbing and the occasional front stabbing. And that built up to the modern incarnation from about the third movie onwards, which portrayed them as a combination of honourable samurai, Vikings, and the occasional touch of sea shanty singing pirates.
So just give us a sense of a little bit of Klingon. Tell me what you had for breakfast maybe this morning. Can you do that?
Jajvam. Shoj vishopta. Chattibach vishopta. Ej. Nachme vishopta.
Good. Did it taste all right?
Majka.
Are there any other speakers of Klingon where you live so that you can have little Klingon chats?
Rope ach vikum ach pij vikum. Pij America duck, Jatwit put Vikrum.
You'll have to translate that bit.
There are no speakers in my immediate area, but I do enjoy conversations with American speakers.
Erica, I believe that you taught yourself Klingon, at least to an elementary standard. How easy did you find that?
It was very difficult, and I'm a linguist. I've studied many languages, and I thought, oh, this will be no big deal. But it's quite different from any European language in any case. It uses a lot of exotic features. And even once I had the grammar under control, to pass the level one certification in Klingon, you have to know 500 words of vocabulary. And that was quite a cramming session for me.
Well, this isn't a trick. Can I see whether you and Alex could just have a basic conversation, maybe about, I don't know, things that you like doing or something? I don't know. Over to you, Alex. Talk to Erica.
Nuknech, Erica.
Nuknech.
UK dak jichtach. Nuk dak shoch.
Dach jidat bech maj ka Klingon. America dak jichtach.
There are conferences called KEP, is that right?
KEP Atme and KEP Chomme.
Ah, right. Good. Well, let's clear that up. Where some people take the vow to speak only in Klingon for the day. Alex, own up. Have you been to one of these? An all-day Klingon fest?
I've been to one, but I never took the oath.
Erica, have you been to one of those conferences?
I've been to two or three. I had to go observe for myself what was really going on there. And I did indeed see people taking the oath, speaking only Klingon, including when they were out at restaurants or in stores talking to some confused waitresses and salespeople in Klingon.
And why do you think Klingon has been so successful compared to other invented languages?
Well, it doesn't have any purported goals to save the world or make everybody think more logically like many of the invented languages in history have. People chose it as purely as a matter of taste. They liked the show, they liked the language, and they decided to learn it on their own. No one was telling them to do it.
Natural languages are dying out all over the world, and yet invented languages seem to come along all the time.
Well, often people say to people who are involved in invented languages, why not learn a natural language? Why are you wasting your time with this? And the truth is, most people aren't learning any languages, natural or otherwise. And you can learn a lot about language in general by looking at an invented language, by trying to push yourself out of the boundaries of your own language. As far as hobbies go, it's a lot less offensive than many hobbies, and there's no reason why people shouldn't do it.
Well, thank you very much, Erica Okrent, author of In the Land of Invented Languages, and my other guests, Alex Green, Colin Fine, Suzette Hayden Elgin, and Mathieu Schreimecker. Goodbye.